It's the Fun Drive 2015 edition of Radio Free Thinker. This week, we have a mashup of Radio Free Thinker and The Sector, as we ask you to give and keep CITR, and more importantly, Radio Free Thinker, on the air. Oh yeah, and I guess The Sector as well. Let's begin episode 287.
It's time for Radio Free Thinker, the show that applies skepticism and critical thinking to everyday issues. The place where reason and reality cross swords with politics, religion, economics, and of course, science. Now let's get ready to be skeptical.
The cosmos is also within us. We're made of spark stuff. We are away. The cosmos can know itself.
Across the sea of space, the stars are others, and we have traveled this way before, and there is much to be learned.
Hello, and welcome to I, Don, your skeptical philosopher and political scientist. So, joining me today in the studio is Ethan Clough, host of the very famous and successful The Sector, and host emeritus of Radio Free Thinker.
Hello, listeners. We're on here with Radio Free Thinker, but I also have to say hello and welcome to all of our Sector podcast listeners. Yes, The Sector, where we talk about social justice, nonprofits, and charities, right here on CITR Fridays at 8 a.m.
Yes. So, to begin the show, let's begin with the big question, copyright The Sector, or this week's wine, writes to RFT, and say, why should you donate? And we have a special guest joining us today, Robin from CITR himself. Robin, why the heck should we give anything to this radio station?
Hey, Don. Hey, Ethan. Great question. And I got to start off by saying, if you're calling in to the studio right now, because I see the flasher going off, the number you should be calling is 604-822-8648, and you'll talk to some great operators outside who will take your money gladly. So you may be calling the wrong number right now. Don't call the studio. Call our operator, 604-822-8648. And your question is, why should people donate?
That's a great, yes. So, well, let's make it a little easier. So, me and Ethan, I think we'll probably fill in some of the why you should donate. Mm-hmm. But if I do donate, where does that money go? What do you do with the money?
What do we do with the money? We don't just run away with it.
Okay. So those rumors of Cuban holidays are all myth.
Yeah. Maybe at the commercial radio stations. But no, what we do with it, and if you're willing to come up to the studios, we'd be very happy to show you what we've done with money from last year. We put that into brand new equipment. So in three of our four studios, you'll see brand new Axia equipment, and it's digital IP-based audio, so it's it's
so
quite a step up.
Fancy dancy mixing boards,
yeah,
that allow us to do our job a lot more dynamically, fluidly, and less of the hiccups that you may have noticed on some of the previous episodes.
Knock on wood, yes. And then in terms of this year's Fun Drive, it's definitely going into something that you'll you won't even have to come up to the studio to see it. You're going to be at home and simply type in our web address, citr.ca, and up comes a brand new website. And this is it's just going to blow our other website out of the water. I'll put it simply. We have a WordPress website, It's like a little blog. We just advertise events that we're related to or what have you. It's not very programming related.
No.
As a host or hosts, mm-hmm, you'll probably notice that. And for listeners, you might be like, where's all the audio content buried in this blog?
Right.
So, immediately, you're going to notice that. And if anyone out there has had a chance to cobble together a website of their own, it's not easy. B, if you're getting someone else to do it who has any expertise, you're going to know it's not that cheap.
Yeah.
So we're looking at something that's pretty comprehensive and also, in my opinion, expensive. And we need your dollars to help us get there. It's these big projects where it's outside of our normal operating budget for paying for normal wear and tear of the station, for upkeep, for our rights to play music. These are all annual fees, for our staff fees. We can't afford the larger things, the larger projects that we want to give back to our volunteer hosts and all our membership who are involved in other departments, and also to our listeners who are tuning in all the time or reading the sites or our magazines. So,
and one of the great projects that we're doing this year is we're digitizing all these old archives.
Right.
So we have this fantastic history here at CITR. I mean, people, I don't think, realize how far back the station goes in UBC's history. But all this great content is going to be made available once again. Discord of Magazine is going to be available to anyone who wants to go through the archives. I mean, there's just like lots of great content in there.
For sure. Years and years and years going back to Vancouver's history right there. And again, that'll be web accessible. Mm-hmm. So it all ties in.
And it's part of the preservation aspect too. Because, I mean, as you say, we have a lot of this music. We have a lot of other content. But a lot of that gets lost over time because literally, where do you find an 8-track recorder player anymore, right? So there's this continual need to not only create new content, but to refresh the old content so it's going forward. But there's another elephant in the room. We're in these, well, kind of dingy studio and the light's a little weird. And I'm sure I hear something breathing from in that corner, but I could be wrong. And there's, of course, the epileptic strobe light that keeps going off. But CITR is moving.
Yeah, we're moving.
In fact, yeah. I think we just found out a hard date for when it's moving.
Yeah, which was even a surprise to me. I'm excited. It's April 25th. That's when we have our party and the switch. We throw the switch, and that's when we're live from the studios in the brand new building, Student Union Building. Inappropriately named the Nest. You know, we're larger than a nest. We don't need we're not little baby birds
anymore. I think they're referring to Hitler's nest that he had that controlled all of Europe. So in that sort of sense,
right.
I think it's much grander than that.
Good point.
Does fit with the sort of philosophy behind the university, I guess, maybe. But speaking of this new space, I mean, pretty innovative. We've seen some of the pictures online on the website. We're kind of buried in the Student Union building right now, but we're going to be front and center in this new building, right?
Mm-hmm. It's very unusual for a radio station of a campus community nature to get that kind of real estate. Mm-hmm. I've been to stations across the country, and usually I know where to look right off the bat. If I come to this building, I start on the basement, and I'm working my way up because I know usually I'm going to be right by going to the basement first, and that's where the station is, in the corner of the basement. We're on the second floor, lucky enough, but yeah. This isn't for radio. These are repurposed for studios and for our use, but we're moving into something that's basically ground floor in a brand new building, looking outside. It's made custom designed by us. And it's going to be great. I'm really looking forward to it.
And I think this is a good point just to take a little pause and say, you know, this shows how important CITR is, not only to us in the studio, but to the community as a whole. And it's being reflected by that by having the front and center. But none of this comes free. All of this requires money to do this. And I think right now would be a great time for it to sit there and say, please help us keep CITR not only going, but moving forward into the future by calling 604-822-8648 or on the website at citr.ca, where you can donate anywhere from $5, $1. Can you donate $1?
$1, yeah.
$1 million if you have that kind of money. It would be very much appreciated. I would do anything for that kind of money. But please phone in, because the new studio, besides being front and center, it's glass fronted, if I believe, so people can come in and see us do our show. Mm-hmm. Is there any plans to do any webcasting from there as far as visuals as well as audio?
Yeah, we would definitely like to do that. It's been talked about quite a lot around the station that we need some video portions. And we're actually in the new building, they're going to have fiber optics. So with that and our new site, it looks like we're going to be able to do a bit more streaming of a higher caliber. So,
and from what I understand as well, just again, to flush out this and why your donations are so important to keep this dream moving forward and moving onward, is there's going to be a concert venue so they can actually have live shows. And actually, at least two of the studios can be sort of live. Mm-hmm. So normally, people who listen to the show, especially when we used to do it here in the studio, you'd have this like 5 minutes or 10 minutes of people sort of fighting as one show tried to leave the studio and the other show tried to enter. And it was always, well, now it's going to be seamless between one and the other. Just flick a switch and you go to the next show, and none of this. And I think it's a wonderful, wonderful new opportunity. But again, it can only happen if people like you who are listening right now, who listen to the podcast, because even if you're not listening now and you listen later, they'll take your money. They will gladly take your money and thank you very much for it. Even if you're listening to the podcast on iTunes, if you're listening to it streaming from the radio, the station's web address, right?
Mm-hmm.
Any other thoughts?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it just goes right down to the point that we are a nonprofit, we are a charity here. We need your support. And you look at the vast history of CITR, look at all the great things that have gone through these airwaves, help us keep putting out more great content and more great shows. And, you know, we just heard a bunch of students in here. Mm-hmm. They're all going to have great shows one day, like ours. And, well, they already have great shows, but they're going to have more great shows. And so help us make sure that happens. You know, that's what it comes down to.
And to build off of that, Ethan, we have over 400 members, and these are members who have volunteered their time because they're passionate and they love what CITR and Discorder mean and do. And I think it's just going to be such a great boost for everyone to be able to finally see all these things come to fruition. They've put in a lot of work for this to happen. There's a lot of work that goes in the background, hours and hours, and there's only two full-time staff here. And when we're talking about digitizing reel-to-reel as one of our main projects this year, there are people who are in constant communication with archives at UBC to negotiate, okay, how can the two of us, archives at UBC and CITR, work together to preserve this reel-to-reel content, which is on very old, fragile, brittle material that would break if you tried to play it. It's going to be baked in an oven for hours. There's a lot that goes into it. So they're willing to put up some staff time and some funding if we can match it. And so stuff like that really goes on in the background where we can get to these points for the station. And we've been here. This CITR has been around for 75 years. And we're always moving forward. And it's because of our support of listeners and our community, our students. It's incredible. It's so amazing to see how much people love this place. And I'm never let down. I'm always surprised, and I think, you know, I'm totally grateful. And I think if you could donate and help us out in this year's fund drive, I'll continue to take my hat off to you. It's 822-8648. That's area code 604-822-8648 or CITR.ca.
I know quite often, you know, the psychologists tell us one way to build connection is to share a personal story. So why am I here? I'm going to start off this. I know my urge to do Radio Free Thinker began about 5 billion years ago. And of course, the first problem was there was no universe. So I got all this stuff in motion. And I wanted to sit there and I wanted to enlighten, inform, and share not only my opinions, but a lot of times I'd find myself debating people or talking to people or hearing things on the radio and just say, this is bullcrap, right? How could you possibly think that? And then I sat back and I kind of realized, well, they think that because they don't know any better. I didn't know any better until someone came and informed me. And one of my quests on Radio Free Thinker is to help inform the public, to let them know, not to tell them what to think. That's never been one of the things, although, of course, obviously you should think what I think. That's, but it's not to indoctrinate, but to inform and enlighten. And that's why Radio Free Thinker is here. That's why Radio Free Thinker continues. And as Robin said, you know, there's a lot of effort on that part to do this, to make this come forward. But that's my story. My story is kind of linked in with Ethan because we both started Radio Free Thinker together. I started with it, like I say, I had a lot of opinions to say. I wanted to educate people. Ethan, why did you want to form Radio Free Thinker and then leave and start the sector? What motivates you?
Well, I mean, I think we've sort of been touching on it, but just giving a venue. I mean, as you were saying, there's a lot of bad media out there. Bad corporations that control media airways. It's about playing the same old. It's about talking about the same old, you know, extravagant and inflammatory discussions. There's not really a place for someone to go and really voice their opinions, get educated, and hear a contrary point of view. I mean, that's the great thing about CITR is that we're providing an alternative source of news, an alternative source of culture and art. And that really can't be undersold. I mean, you look at our media in Vancouver and Canada, it's 90% controlled by a couple companies. We've been talking about the CBC a lot. And look at how that one institution has changed over the last, even like 5 years. Yep. You won't see a hockey game on CBC anymore. Like that was unthinkable 5 years ago.
Yeah.
So places like CITR are all the more important. And that's, you know, whenever I sit down to record the sector or come in here with Don, I remind myself of that. And I think, you know, I have a responsibility to our listeners to make sure that I'm providing them something that they're not going to find somewhere else.
And I think your link with the CBC is great, too, because why is the CBC decaying as an institution? It's money, folks. It always comes down to money. I mean, I'm a communist and I don't like the idea of money. I don't believe in our capitalist society. But I have to live in the world that I live in. And our current government has seen fit to cut and cut and cut its budget to the point where it can no longer do what it needs to do. But we want to be able to do what we need to do. We need to pull up that slack. And we can only do that if people listen and donate and give to us. And I'm going to throw it back to you, Robin. So you're one of the two paid people here, right? You obviously could have a much better paying job if you went to one of the big corporate outlets or, you know, there is that book you've been thinking of writing for years. Why do you put up with all the crap that goes on in a station like this? Because it's like herding cats. I know Ethan's ego, my ego, we're pretty big, we're pretty isolated and all those things. And you've got to herd us all sort of into one sort of coherent direction to make this radio station tick. Why do you bother?
It's real. I've been in corporate environments and sat in my cubicle and got paid a lot of money for it, and it hurts. I have to say, like the goal around that one place I'm describing was good, is transit oriented, but I couldn't take it after a while. It's not worth the money. Being here, and I've been working in volunteering in campus community radio for probably since my late teens, and I'm in my late 30s now, and it's always been volunteer based, and I worked my way up through it solely on my experiences and connections and passion for it. And I enjoy the environment. I enjoy people, and I enjoy being around people who are passionate and putting in hours because they love what they're doing. I wouldn't have it any other way. I love it. It's real and simply. That's what it is.
And that sense of love is very common in the nonprofit sector. And that's what you want to see as a donor. You want to see that the people who are involved with your charity of choice have that passion. And at CITR, I mean, we have passion flowing out of the rooms. It's so strong here. So, you know, we really do encourage you to donate. Call in 604-822-8648. Any amount, you know, think about all the great programming that you've heard over the years and all the great programming that you're going to hear over the next couple of years.
Yes, I think that's quite good. Now, normally I would break for a commercial, but obviously the whole show is kind of a commercial. but I'd like to put a little meat onto our request. You know, why should you pay us, you know, our pearls of wisdom, our fountain of knowledge, our ocean of commentary. It's well-researched commentary as well. Currently, our total, I've been told by one of our little...
How about that little?
is $20,025. And actually, on that note, I was hoping to make a surprise announcement earlier, but I have several donors who have given money. Thank you to Harold and Del McClenigan, who obviously are going to support.
Thank you.
Another donation for Louise Bazant. Thank you for that. And there is the people that I work with in the real world. Freddie, Farhat, Adrian, thank you for donating. There are more people going to be added to that list, but that puts us well above the $20,000 mark. And you should be doing your part as well. But going back to what I was saying, because my elves just sort of disrupted me a bit, this week saw the passing of a cultural icon. Spock, or he's known to the local life forms, Leonard Nimoy, passed away. And I thought I would just take a moment, because I think we should, as to what do you think of... Actually, before we start that, I was listening to a convocation speech that he had given. And where he said some what I thought were some interesting words of wisdom. So I'm going to play that a little bit, and then when we come back, we will talk a bit about that, and we'll continue on with our Pledge Drive show, assuming I can get everything to work the way it's supposed to. Survey says...
And then came Mr. Spock in 1966. It took 15 years, but I was ready. I was on my game. Still... I hesitated. I took my work seriously. Did I really want to put on those pointed ears? Well, a wonderful curator and founder of the new museum in New York, Marcia Tucker, said, "Do what scares you." Well, it scared me, and I did it. My folks came to the United States as immigrants, aliens, and they became citizens. I was born in Boston, a citizen. I went to Hollywood, and I became an alien. Spock called for exactly the kind of work I was prepared to do. He was a character with a rich and dynamic inner life, half human, half Vulcan. He was the embodiment of the outsider, like the immigrants who surrounded me in my early years. How do you find your way as the alien in a foreign culture? How does your identity, your dignity, where does your identity and your dignity come from? And how do you make a contribution? I'm reminded as a quote from John F. Kennedy as president. He said, "We must never forget that art is not a form of propaganda. Art is a form of truth." Spock was a truth. The character, seemingly so foreign, was welcomed and quickly became enormously popular. And then, for the first time, in a wonderful script by Theodore Sturgeon, I said, "Live long and prosper," and stuck up my hand in an ancient Hebraic gesture, and the deal was done. The secret of a long, healthy career in the arts is the successful walk on the razor's edge. Here's a description of the artist's life. Edwin Booth, the actor, heard the solemn whisper of the God of all arts, "I shall give you hunger and pain and sleepless nights. Also, beauty and satisfaction known to few, and glimpses of the heavenly life. None of these shall you have continually, and of their coming and going you shall not be foretold." As a kid, we walked the Boston Commons and the public gardens, and I was intrigued by the inscription on a fountain there. It's from Ecclesiastes. It says, "Cast thy bread upon the waters, for thou shalt find it after many days." Not long ago, I tweeted that. And what came back was, "Cast thy bread upon the waters, and you'll get soggy bread." Well, I reject cynicism. I reject it. To me, that inscription means, what goes around comes around. You are the creators and the curators of your own lives. You create your own life and your work. Give us your best. Give us the best of your art. We crave it. We hunger for it. Help us to see ourselves, to know ourselves. Illuminate our lives. And keep in mind what Victor Hugo said, popularity is the crumbs of greatness. And please, please, for the sake of our culture, for the sake of mankind, don't create any more reality TV shows. And of course, I cannot leave without saying to you, in all sincerity, live long and prosper.
Well put, Leonard Nimoy. Well put. So, any parting thoughts about the legacy of Leonard Nimoy and Spock? I was stunned that I didn't know this, that he was such a vocal, apparently, campaigner against smoking, because the thing that ultimately killed him was lung disease, which was directly related to smoking. And I had, what's the word I'm looking for here? Typecast Leonard Nimoy to being Spock or just an actor. And he had this whole other side to him that I had missed out on.
Yeah, he a very fascinating man. Quite literally, of course, fascinating, being one of Spock's trademarks. But, you know, people talk about him as one of the early sort of pioneers of making a scientist cool, of making it cool to be smart, to be an explorer, to enjoy science fiction, to enjoy being curious about the world. One of the interesting things about Leonard Nimoy as a person, though, I mean, as you say, he kind of had that phase where he didn't want to be associated with Spock. You know, he wrote the book "I'm Not Spock," and then he wrote the book "I Am Spock," and that always kind of struck me as a really sort of interesting transition, where he went from kind of being very standoffish and reserved, and I'm an actor and blah, blah, blah. But then he kind of embraced it, and I thought that was really great because you were able to enjoy this huge legacy that he helped create. And, you know, you look at someone like Patrick Stewart, who is this great Shakespearean actor, and yet he loves the fact that he played Captain Picard. He loves the fact that he played Professor X in X-Men.
Yep.
And, you know, it's a great thing when you have these actors who can appreciate their art on that level.
And I think it plays into, as you say, with his having to deal with his typecasting, for lack of a better word, as Spockian, mm-hmm. right, is that, you know, sometimes success comes to us and you don't necessarily want it, but then you embrace it because you realize, and I think he did over the years, what a bigger thing this idea of Spock was to the world, that he gave birth to not a typecast actor like so many things. You know, let's think Reagan was bedtime for Bonzo, and there's a number of other actors. Let's see the Fonz, right? Mm-hmm. You know, these people may have been typecast in a way, but they didn't have the cultural impact that a character like Spock did, or the fact that he brought so much gravitas to any role. I loved it when he did his Dr. Bell role on The Fringe, which was, you know, one of his last acting roles he did. And it was just, as you say, it made science cool. He has so many great lines. What was one of the lines here that I love from his Spock days? It is curious how often humans manage to obtain that which they do not want. Insufficient facts always invites danger. I mean, that's another thing I think about is I'm a skeptic. And one of the reasons why I think I may have become a skeptic is I watched the old Star Trek shows. And the idea that, you know, you shouldn't be run by emotion. You should actually sit back and say, what are the facts? What's going on there? And then make your decisions on that. That lies at his feet. And I think it's really, really good.
Mm-hmm. Well, even the fact that, you know, one of the things about Spock was that he was half human. And I always think that's interesting because we think of Spock as this, you know, avatar of rationality. But let's not forget, Spock had his moments where his human side took over, when he thought he killed Captain Kirk, for instance, and all those things. And I think that humanized him. That helped us see the fact that humans could live up to this ideal, but that we could also be in touch with the side that makes us human, our emotions. We could understand how to navigate that and combine those things. And that's the great thing about Star Trek, was that it wasn't just about cold, hard science. It was about optimism and exploration and the joy of discovery.
And I think, too, the struggle that all of us lead each day. I mean, I know I should do X, but I have the urge to do Y. Mm-hmm. And that how, as he's half Spock, half Vulcan, half human, you know, he is the embodiment of everyone out there. Unlike Captain Kirk, who ostensibly was the main character of the show. But if you look at his character, he's very irresponsible, very dangerous, very almost everything that is wrong with humanity, but just really lucky that it worked out the same way. I think that was one of the things that I liked about Patrick Stewart when he became the new captain of the Enterprise, is I think he kind of wanted to be the more humanized, but still very Vulcan, because, I mean, he was very involved in science. Who saw that? But I think we should get back to why we're here. And so, as Ethan is the quasi-guest, and I am his quasi-guest on this particular episode, let's talk about charities and charitable donations and such things. I was listening to one of your shows, and you were talking about the whole idea of swag. Right. Before the show, I was asked, is there any specific show swag that we were going to give up for Radio Free Thinker? And I said no, because every year we kind of had this swag. Nobody really seemed to care one way or the other about it. So this year, screw you, you're not going to get anything but the normal swag. But does that somehow diminish the whole idea of generosity? Does it sort of, what's the word? It removes social responsibility, because I'm not doing it because I think this is a good thing. I'm doing it because, oh, I want that gift.
Yeah. It's really interesting. There's a lot of research out there about the effect that swag is a interesting word, because it can mean so many different things. But basically, if you have an incentive to donate, like if you win a prize or you get a special gift, it does raise interesting questions about sort of the philosophy behind giving. It also raises certain legal questions. As we all know, the CRA keeps a very close eye on this sort of thing. And I was learning in my education and in practice that you can actually make your life really difficult if you give out too many prizes for your donations. That has to be subtracted from your tax receipt. And it also can't be seen as a purchase. So, you know, a really good example is you hear about these sort of like galas, right? Where somebody says, donate $500 and you get to have lunch with so-and-so.
Right.
You know. Aren't you just buying a ticket? Like, yeah. Really, right? Like, so, you know, that can be a big headache for a fundraiser or an administrator or a bookkeeper because they have to decide, whoa, wait a second here. Did we just sell something?
Well, no. Okay, let's get into that. What would be wrong if I'm a charity and I'm selling bottled water?
Mm-hmm.
That's still... I mean, why?
Yeah. Well, the reason is because actually kind of touching on something we were talking about before the show, we have this tradition in Canada to not write down the laws. Everything is based on kind of a precedent. And the precedent for a charitable gift, in quotation marks, is a gift given. It could be land, it could be money, it could be services, but it has to be given without the thought or without the expectation of receiving something in return. This is why it's so important for an organization to have either charity status or nonprofit status, because they are equipped to handle gifts in different ways. Now, where this starts to get fuzzy is when you have things like social enterprises, which are sort of businesses that are run like charities. All of this will change the legal framework of receiving something for your donation. And it can be really easy. If, like, for here at CITR, it's very easy. No one has to worry about, you know, taking one of those friend cards or one of those really cool toques or scarf. But for some of the bigger charities out there that are giving away prizes that are considerably valuable, it can be a major major issue.
I wonder, do you get the same sort of thing that if I wanted to buy a building at UBC, you know, the Don McLennigan Library of Knowledge, is that sort of the same thing, or is that an entirely...
It raises other questions. You know, one thing, if you drive around Vancouver and look at some of the hospitals and some of the medical centers, they all have names like the, you know, Robert Wright School of Medicine. Who's Robert Wright, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, some guy who gave a lot of money. Sometimes things happen and it turns out, you know, Mr. Robert Wright was actually kind of a bad guy. Mm-hmm. Now what do? Do you rename the building? Mm-hmm. What if his, you know, grandson says, whoa, you can't do that. We gave you that $5 million. You keep our name on this building.
We paid for it.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. That who owns it, right?
Right.
Like, so it raises a lot of interesting questions. In fact, a lot of charities these days have been giving out naming rights with limits. So you donate $5 million. We're going to call this the Don McLennigan Hospital for 15 years. Then it expires. It goes back to being so-and-so hospital. So, I mean, again, it's sort of a philosophical discussion about, like, is it moral to expect something in return versus is this just how business is done? And when you give $5 million, you get your name on something.
Do I get a tax receipt for that? Because again, isn't I'm buying something,
well, yeah, right. Does that mean you've gotten something in return if your name is on it? If you're a businessman like Jim Pattison, who is a huge philanthropist, but his name's on a lot of stuff and he's a very a successful businessman in the Vancouver area, has he not gotten something in return?
And that becomes a lot more important these days because, rolling on to another sort of topic, is, how do I put this, the current political witch hunt over charities by the CRA, or Canadian Revenue Agency, for those people who watch way too much American TV, think IRS, and how there's been just, well, I think you refer to it, everyone's referred to it as a chill over charities, right? Because you're afraid to do what you're sort of meant to do.
Yeah.
How is that working out?
Well, not well. As maybe some of our listeners probably know about, Dying with Dignity, the organization that recently won a major court case over assisted dying, had their charity status revoked. So they're officially a nonprofit now. I actually spoke with their board chair on a recent episode of The Sector, and I asked him about this, like, how does this affect your organization? He said, we don't know. And I mean, you think about the impact of not being able to give a tax receipt. That can have a huge impact on your growth. It can have a huge impact on your perception and the public. That being said, as a nonprofit, it does free them up to do more political activity. So it could be a win-win. The troubling aspect of this, of course, is that a charity has to defend itself when the CRA comes knocking. They have to hire people to go through boxes and boxes of paperwork. They have to hire somebody to come in and balance their budgets. You know, these are all expenses that take them away from doing their work. If you're there to protect the environment and someone comes in and says, hold on, we need to see the last 5 years of your operational budgets, you have to hire someone.
Exactly. And it cuts into your time again. You know, like we had Robin in here. Robin would not have been able to help organize this fund drive if he had to go back and find out where did they get that $5 cup of coffee from on January 3rd, 2012, right? Yeah.
Well, and also it goes into the question of what kind of resources are we expending to catch charities in the act? Like, don't get me wrong. There are charities out there that have been caught doing bad things. There are people out there who have done really nefarious things. They've stolen money. They've embezzled money. So we need the CRA to stop these people. We need the CRA to keep an eye on things. But when they're devoting significant resources and specifically focusing on things like environmental causes, human rights issues, targeting organizations like Oxfam, Amnesty International, the David Suki Foundation, and you couple that with the rhetoric that's coming out of, say, the Harper government, calling environmentalists terrorists, saying that the anti-petroleum movement is a bigger danger to Canadians than terrorism. This is not insignificant rhetoric, and it's having a major impact on a charity who goes out there and says, you know, we could put out this really, you know, awesome press release, but should we?
Right. You know, and it's so very almost blatantly ideological, because again, there wasn't like there's been this huge problem of people stealing money in charities, right? You know, grifting off the top. By and large, the charities have worked pretty much. The CRA's investigation of them has worked pretty well. But there was a special allocation of money just to do these particular audits. Well, ironically enough, they were cutting back money to do other audits. So if you happen to be Jimmy Patterson, right, and you're trying to hide your money in Tahiti or something, they no longer have anyone to go after you, but they do have to go after something like, I don't know, the Have Culinary School that you were talking about before the show.
Yeah.
Right?
It's a question of where is the need for the CRA? And if there was significant things going on that the CRA needed to investigate, fraud or, you know, some kind of malpractice, they don't have the resources to do that because they're too busy, you know, chasing the David Suki Foundation. And again, it's like, okay, sure, it's possible that somebody there could be doing fraud. But look at the history, though, when you look at the reputation that they have, is that the best use of the CRA's limited resources?
But they're not even really worried about that either, from what I understand. They're worried about political activity.
Right, and that's the other side of this.
The term of political activity is so broadly listed, right? I mean, there's no definition.
Yeah, there's no definition, and there's no explanation of how a charity should manage it. They're limited to 10%, and again, what does that even mean? Does that mean 10% of money? Does that mean 10% of volunteer resources? Does that mean 10% of pure like financial resources? We don't really know. We don't know if there is somebody at the CRA who is going through the Twitter feed of these charities and saying, oh, that's political, that's political, that's political. We don't know. They won't tell us. And so all of this adds up. And you have these charities who are sitting back and saying, we can't do our job anymore because we're risking bringing an audit down on ourselves. But their job is to help guide political conversations. Their job is to engage society and create these conversations. They can't do it if they're afraid.
Well, and it's so crazy is because you're dealing with the idea that a lot of these institutions or charities are designed to educate. Mm-hmm. And at what point do you sit there and say, listen, the tar sands will provide this much greenhouse gases? Is that political or is that educational? Mm-hmm. And because of the way the lines are drawn is so fuzzy, they can pick and choose however they want. And it seems to be that they are picking and choosing how they want because no one's talking about ethical oil and how it's very blatantly for the right wing, whereas people are talking about the Center for Canadian Policy Alternatives and how, ooh, are they political or are they not? When you just want to inform the public. And you get this again with the way the current government has slapped down Elections Canada and its job to help educate Canadians on the importance of voting. No, you're not allowed to do that. It's almost as if there's this thing that they want to dumb down the local citizens. But it's just not the Harper government. And although that's my own particular bugaboo, let's not forget, this is 2015. There is an election at the end of the year, and we need to change things. But locally here in BC, the new Charities Act, I think it is, or there's a way for me to sue the Suzuki Foundation if they have harmed me in some economic manner or some such thing.
Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of new legislation. There's all kinds of new limitations that have been brought about. One of the really good examples is the anti-spam legislation, which is to finally stamp out the awful problem of getting too many emails. Because we all know that delete button, can't have that anymore.
No, and the spam filter doesn't work anymore.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where probably somebody sat down and had the best of intentions and said, okay, how can we fix this problem? The problem is that most of the spam that we get as Canadians doesn't come from Canada. So effectively, the legislation is useless right. in that respect. Number two, it inadvertently, perhaps, disproportionately, definitely affects nonprofits and charities because they need to email people and say, please donate. FYI, please donate to CITR right now. the problem is that if you give somebody the legal ability to say to a charity, never ever contact me again, and if you do, I will sue you for millions of dollars, that's disastrous. Mm-hmm. You know, it may sound a little bit elitist and it may sound a little bit judgmental, but honestly, for goodness sakes, you've gotten an email. We haven't, like, broken down your door and said, give us money.
Well, it's even more than that, because if I remember correctly, that if you sit there and if you blockade a road to, let's say, an oil development or a pipeline, they can sue you for lost income from that, right? Mm-hmm. And that, like I say, I'm pretty sure it's the Charities Act has been changed to allow businesses and nonprofits to sue you if they think you have caused them some form of harm. Which just strikes me as crazy. But on that note, we're going to take a pause. We're going to still keep talking, mind you, because you can't stop me talking once I start talking. And to remind you, as Ethan just did, to call 604-822-8648 to donate or go to the website. Now, I haven't mentioned about the swag for those people who want that. First, you're not getting the same kind of swag that they got at the Oscar Awards, which apparently some of the people got up to $167,000 worth of freebies. You're not getting that here, folks. Sorry. But if you donate at the $30 level, you get a Friends of CITR card. At the $60 level, you get the card plus a CITR toque. If you donate at the 101.9, level, you get the card, you get a toque, and you get a Sub Pop cassette plus digital download. I'm not sure what that is. I'm sort of, what's a cassette again?
It's this ancient form of technology, kind of like the Rosetta Stone.
If you donate at $150, you get the card, you get a toque, you get a Discordia scarf, you get the Sub Pop cassette plus digital download. If you want to really, really show how much you care at the $250 level, you get all the stuff I mentioned, plus a framed Discordia cover of your choice. The $500 gets all of the above, plus an on-air shout-out and 10-song playlist of their choice. Does that mean you just play 10 songs on air that you want them to... Wouldn't they do that anyway?
Well, you know, it's one of those just ways of saying thank you.
Yeah, okay, I can go for that. And for the $1,000 level, each donator will be listed on a cassette tape on the donor wall in the new CITR station and the new sub, plus all of the stuff I mentioned. And I already mentioned before, at the $1 million level, I will be at your service to do anything legal. So, that being said, what's next, Ethan? What should we talk about now?
Well, we should mention for people out there who are thinking about making a donation, we actually have gotten a few $1,000 gifts here over the last fund drive. Amazing generosity. So I just want to take a moment and thank those people who have reached really deep and made a fantastic commitment. You know, it's going to be really cool when we go into the new Student Union building and we see those names up on the wall. And it reinforces the fact that this is not our radio station. It's not Robin's radio station. It's everybody's radio station.
Our radio station.
It is community owned. Mm-hmm. It is meant for the purpose of serving UBC and Vancouver. And, you know, again, not to tear down the other fine media producers here in Vancouver, but, you know, we're here to serve a social purpose, and that is to help this community. You're not going to find that on Rock 101 or whatever. You're going to find that here on CITR.
Well, and one of the reasons why Radio Free Thinker has tackled a lot of controversial topics in the past is we don't have to worry about things like, are we going to get our sponsorship taken away? Are we going to...
Another $20 have come in.
Score.
Yay. God, now I forgot what I was going to say. I was going to say that we're wonderful, that we do great things because we don't have any corporate masters. We don't have to worry about, you know... are we gonna lose spending? Am I gonna lose my job here because I tackled this particular topic? Like right now, I saw some signs about the Israeli BDS, the boycott and stop investing in Israel. And those are topics that you don't get a good feel on regular media, regular corporate media, because they have to worry about, you know, are they going to have to worry? Are they worried that the government's going to clamp down on them? CITR is, it's a charity. Oh, whoops, maybe they are going to clamp down on us.
We will fight them.
Yes. And on that note, so I'm going to cover some things from Radio Free Thinker that we've covered over the last year, like GMOs. You know, I mean, it's been such a bizarre year with the genetically modified foods that have been out there and how much disinformation is going out there. And one of the things that we provide for you is a non-strings attached view of what are GMOs. Whenever you hear corporate media say GMOs are safe or GMOs are not safe, you're always wondering, well, who's paying for that? What commercial is going on, right? Whose book deal are they trying to promote? In so many of the anti-big whatever, you know, there's like no money interests on the other side. No, there is. These people are peddling books. They have speaking fees. They have lots of, you don't get that here. You get just my raw input, the research that I've done into the topic.
Nobody pays us to say anything.
Right. Down that note, please pay us by donating to CITR. So I have an interesting thought for you just to close out the last 10 or so minutes of the show. Just evolving when I came on the show was an Ontario MP who was tweeting that, quote, evolution is not fact. And he denies climate change and questions vaccinations. And should there be an intelligence test before you become someone who can actually control this country? I mean, the thought that someone who could be so... well, not anti-science, because that includes science as some kind of belief, but science is reality. Mm-hmm. And how he does the switch off, you know, he doesn't deny that gravity is a fact, but gravity is a theory, and that was one of the things he was pushing. Oh, you can say evolution's a theory, because that's just someone's hunch, when it's not, if you really understood the things. But what accountability do we have for public officials in their private views?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, in a perfect world, if somebody went out there and said, evolution is just a theory, well, duh. You would have an informed public who would say, who is this guy? Where did someone let him in to not have security or something?
Right.
But unfortunately, public conversation about these sort of things hasn't exactly been up to par, I think, which is too bad. I mean, I think as Canadians, we're a pretty well-educated bunch, well, most of us. We have a pretty good system of... debate and public discourse. You know, we're not a shy people. I mean, we're polite, but we're not going to hide from a good conversation. So it is a little bit disheartening when that sort of thing happens, and we allow politicians, or really anyone, a celebrity, you know, to kind of hide behind this notion of either free speech, which is usually one of them, or this kind of, well, it's just my opinion. Right. Well, then your opinion is wrong. I mean, let's get to the chase.
Yeah, and there's always that sort of false equivalency because, you know, again, in these tweets that come out, I believe he said, well, some scientists believe that creationism is just as valid. And I'm going, yeah, and some people think that black people are subhuman. I don't see how that's really relevant in a civilized conversation.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, and it's always the same old thing with evolution. You know, oh, it's a theory, and why are there so monkeys around and all this stuff. You know, it's almost too bad that we couldn't just organize... you know, a place where we collected books, and you could go to this place and maybe for a nominal fee gain some kind of admittance card so that you could take books out of this place, read them, and then return them. But I think the conservatives may have defunded that thing, so I don't know where it is anymore.
Well, and the worst of it is a lot of these people go on the alternative source, which is the web. And as we all know, you can never really quite trust the web, mm-hmm. right? It's not the first thing you read that's important. It's the four things that led up to that first thing that you have to be worried about, which is why, again, one of the services that I try to provide on Radio Free Thinker, and I'm sure Ethan provides on the sector, is it's not the headline that we're giving you. It's, is the headline true? And what made that headline what it is, so that you can assess, you can figure out, well, should I believe this or not? Because we can't all take the time to go out and say, well, is climate change real? Yeah. I hear on Fox News that some people think it is, some people think it's not, right? And me and Ethan are well up on a lot of the research, a lot of the other sources of information, but not everyone gets to listen to what we listen to, so we condense, we gel the pertinent information, give it to you in a nice bite small bite.
Well, that's one of the reasons why I always encourage people to check out sectorpodcast.wordpress.com. I collect all of the sources that I look at, and I post them up there, and I say, have at it. You know, if you find out that it's wrong or that I missed something, like, let me know. And listeners have been great about that, and I'm more than happy to come back on next week and say, hey, guess what? Remember that thing I told you about last week? Here's some more information. You know, that's something, again, that you don't find in other sources. You don't get a lot of news reporters who will come on the next week and say, oh, by the way, remember how I told you that I was on a helicopter in a combat mission? Well, yeah. I wasn't. So,
yeah, don't give away. That's coming up on our next show about how memory cannot necessarily be as reliable as you think it is. But it also goes to a thing is that some people have, I don't want to say complained, but they mentioned, well, Don, you know, you've talked about GMOs like four times last year, and you talked about the anti-vax movement like four times. And part of the reason why we do that is because, unlike, again, the mass media, we're not chasing headlines. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I was talking about Ebola months before it became a big thing on the popular news because, again, from my sources, it was like, hey, this is going to be a big thing. And it was not only a big thing, it kept maintaining to be a big thing, even when the news started going away. A lot of people may not know, Ebola's still out there. In fact, Sierra Leone had to step up its quarantine procedures because although it was the rates of infection were going down, they're now going back up again. And did you hear that on the CBC? Did you hear that on, you know, the popular news? No, but you will hear it here on CITR, Radio Free Thinker, because that's part of the service that we offer to you as a community.
Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, it's one of those things where There is an explosive quality to the news that we try to filter out here for you guys, for your listening pleasure. It's something that really can't be understated. If all you see on CNN and MSNBC are these big explosive headlines and these fancy graphics and this dramatic music, it can color your perceptions of the news. It can change the way you look at things without relying on facts and figures and the real important things. Here on CITR, we try to strip away the sensationalism and give you something that you can actually think about and discuss and critically analyze. And you know, again, that's one of the reasons why you should support us, why we need your help. Call in 604-822-8648. Any amount will help. What are we up to? About $20,045. We're more than halfway to our fundraising total of $40,000. And of course, there's the big fund drive finale on March 6th at Pat's Pub. So we'll hopefully get a lot of money flowing there.
And actually, let's correct that because right after the show, I'm going to update these numbers. So it actually should be $20,247 because, as I've mentioned, at least two donors who are going to donate for the show. And that's an important thing, too, to mention, is when you give your donations, let us know, you know, did we have an impact on you? One of the things they have on the website, they have when you call in, is you can actually say, hey, I like to donate money and I'd like to thank this show for sort of introducing me into CITR. So mm-hmm. Again, point it towards the sector, point it towards Radio Free Thinker, whichever you have. I'm curious to know too that, well, I'm gonna say it was because of Radio Free Thinker that this happened, but the last epidemic of anti-vaxxing, the measles ones, the Disney mm-hmm. epidemic.
Right.
I was surprised at the amount of what is the word? Backlash against the anti-vax movement. Usually it's like, ooh, there's this debate and, you know, should we do this? Is it safe? Mm-hmm. But no, almost all the news that I saw was like, these people are crazy. Why aren't you vaccinating your kids? There was like, we finally got past that faux balance that you tend to get on stuff like that.
Well, that didn't surprise me. I remember a couple of years ago when we had the big sort of vaccine debate at SFU. And I did sort of a media blitz. I went around and talked to the CBC and all the different news outlets here in Vancouver. And I would say almost like 99% of the time, the people in the media were totally on side with the science and the sort of pro-vaccine viewpoint. It was only the kind of fringe groups of media that even gave any credence. But it was just a question of, for them, it's an explosive story. And they had to present this kind of false balance as though there was, you know, there was more merit there than it deserved. And that's unfortunate. And but again, I think it does show the fact that, you know, science prevails in the end.
Yes, it does. And wow, I found out my mouse was moving my volume on my headphones up and down, and it was like really hurting my ears.
Oh, that's about it.
Well, I guess we've pretty much reached the end according to the clock, and I see someone out front, and I have somehow managed to forget the closing music for it. I knew I would do stuff like this.
Oh, Don.
Yes, I know. I am such a wonderful whiz when it comes to live performances. So, last words. What are we going to say?
Well, let's encourage people to donate, to call in, go to the website, www.citr.ca. You can donate online any amount. You can come by to the station if you're local, if you want to drop off a check or some cash. You can donate at the Fun Drive finale. And of course, you know, if you're listening to this via podcast and it's like, turns out to be, you know, March 18th, for example, I don't know why it's that late, but maybe it is. Maybe you're really busy. Don't worry. You can still donate. Just give us a shout at the station. Visit us online. We will gladly take your donation. You'll still get a tax receipt. Everything will be okay. You'll help us out. So do it.
Do it, yes. So I guess say goodbye, Ethan.
Well, goodbye, everybody. And I will see you all on the next episode of The Sector.
And this is Don saying eyes open, minds on. And Ethan, distract him for a minute while I find some music.
Okay, well, while Don is doing that, we should talk a bit more about CITR and why you should support this station. You know, again, as Robin mentioned, we're really investing in the future. We're building a new website. We are digitizing our archives. And again, that can't be overstated just how awesome that is. You know, imagine if there was some kind of disaster and there was like a big fire or a flood or global warming happens and we lose this great history. You know, as Robin said, we've been around for a very long time. There's a lot of valuable documents, a lot of history here that we're going to pursue.